Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case for this morning is United States versus Sykes. Mr. Murphy.
Thank you. May it please the court, Judge Taney, Judge Rovner, Judge Evans. The district court erred here by failing to provide adequate factual and legal findings concerning two contested guidelines issues arising out of the pre-sentence investigation report below. Notwithstanding the fact that the district court was presented with extensive briefing supplemented by detailed documentary evidence from both parties prior to sentencing, the court below failed to meet its responsibility of providing an adequate record of the resolution of these contested issues.
What was the total amount of the fraudulent deposits?
The total amount of the fraudulent deposits was the $13 million plus that the government had relied on and the judge concluded was the accurate intended loss in this case.
Why isn't that enough? Why isn't it as simple as that?
Well, it isn't as simple as that because we presented documentary evidence to show that the intended loss, which is, after all, what the guidelines call for. The guidelines say you look to actual loss unless the intended loss exceeds it. Both the government and Mr. Sykes acknowledged that the intended loss exceeded the actual loss. But the government's intended loss was every penny on every fraudulent check deposited should count, which basically eliminates the concept of the defendant's intent. What we did was set out a detailed accounting of, with charts and evidence derived from the government's discovery, showing what Mr. Sykes actually intended to steal, which was of that $13 million deposit figure, somewhere in the area of $3.3 million.
But weren't those charts and documents Sykes' own representations, sort of rather than sworn testimony?
They were evidence. They were documentary evidence. It was the government's discovery. The government gained that discovery by pulling off by a consent search of Mr. Sykes' computer. That's where they downloaded those documents and provided to us. We set that out. Now, the theories that supported our position were to some extent based on inferences out of those documents. But nonetheless, Judge, the real problem here isn't whether that's ultimately true or not true, or reliable or not reliable. We simply don't know what the district court said here, because the district court merely said, essentially, I agree with the government.
Well, but isn't it true that a district court has a fairly minimal burden in complying with the requirements of Rule 22? In other words, it seems to be possible for a district court to satisfy the rule by adopting the findings and the PSR, as long as the PSR contains or articulates, I guess, a sufficiently clear basis for a sentence.
Well, I think therein lies the rub, Judge. The PSR in this case did not, which I should state, essentially parroted the government's version of the offense. The PSR in this case did nothing more than say, here was the grand total of the check deposited, so therefore the loss exceeded $10 million, so therefore there was a 15-point enhancement. There was no analysis in the PSR. I suppose,
what would you want him to say?
I think the court, more than the probation department, the court needs to say when there is a disputed legal issues and when there are disputed factual issues, which facts it specifically relied on.
So if we send it back, that's what you want the district judge to do, to say exactly what you're articulating?
Precisely.
So are we wasting time to do that?
Absolutely not. There are three reasons I would say we're not wasting time. Number one, the district court, by going back and reviewing it and reconsidering it and issuing a detailed analysis, we believe very well may find for us. Maybe that is wishful thinking, but we believe in our issue, and we believe if the court is put in a position to follow its responsibility, it could do that. Secondly, the reason it's not a waste of time is these are standards that this court and the rules have set. There's a reason for them.
But
we need to have these findings and these standards. Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
No.
Here the court explained that it believes that Mr. Sykes intended to steal the total amount of money that he deposited into the various accounts, and that he was persuaded by Mr. Sykes' own statements to the Merrill Lynch investigator, and that's enough for Rule 22.
Well, my reading of that is slightly more ambiguous than that. The court did say, I'm persuaded. But importantly, the court didn't say why it was persuaded. That's first. And it's essential. For this court, it's essential. This court can't review how a court reaches a result unless the district court tells you how to reach a result.
Well,
and simply saying, I found a result doesn't count.
If the court says, look, I am really persuaded by this man's statement to this investigator.
Well,
what?
I understand what the court's saying. No. I don't think, frankly, that's what the judge said. The judge said it was much more ambiguous about it. The judge did refer to the investigator's statement. And if I can find it myself here, Judge. He says, as a matter of fact, his discussions with a private security agent for Merrill Lynch seem to indicate to the contrary. Now, one could say that I suppose, is something that suggests he believes it. But I'm not sure that is actually what he's saying. I'm not sure from that. But more importantly, the Merrill Lynch statement, which was a paraphrase by the government in the record, simply said that Mr. Sykes indicated an ability to do that, not an intent to do that.
Isn't it logical to assume that he was going to steal, fraudulently acquire as much money as he possibly could?
No, in fact, I think it isn't.
What was constraining him?
What the only thing that constrained
him
was
getting caught.
What was constraining him was his needs at the time, what he was attempting to do with it, which was to finance business deals, essentially. That's what we tried to show. He set the accounts up in sort of a gross sense because he wanted to have margin to take some of it out without having to take all of it out and leaving a trail.
That just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I would say, Judge, that we can't. The point is, I appreciate that you feel that way, but the reality is, we don't know if that's how the judge ruled.
People intend to steal as much as they can steal.
I would say, in my experience, that's not necessarily accurate.
Well, that isn't?
No. In my experience, the people who set up fraudulent accounts like these things sometimes intend to steal the full amount, but sometimes aren't intending to steal the full amount, and there are other intervening factors which cause them or make them or not want to steal that. And so I don't know that that's the case. And we laid out our argument for that. And it could be accepted, it could be rejected. The problem is the judge rejected it and didn't tell us why he rejected it. And that's really the issue before this court. So I guess the white light's on, so I'll reserve a couple of minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Hayes?
May it please the court, Brian Hayes on behalf of the United States. I think this court is right that the district court has a minimal burden of satisfying Rule 32 in this situation. And in fact, the court went far beyond what it would have been required to do in this instance. The court not only adopted the PSR and its findings, but it did so after a lengthy consideration of the issues, both in terms of written submissions by the parties and the sentencing hearing itself. There were extensive arguments, and the court made it very clear on the record that it was persuaded by the government's arguments in support of the PSR, that the case law supported the government's arguments, that the application note on loss amount supported the government's arguments, and the court stated that it felt that the objective evidence, putting aside the subjective arguments made by the defendant to say what his intended amount was, that the objective evidence supported the government's argument and supported the calculation contained in the PSR. So I think that the district court went far above and beyond what it was required to do to adequately document its findings. I think you can say the same with regard to the criminal history category. There were a number of documents submitted to the district court, and a number of those particular convictions were discussed at the sentencing hearing. And I think the district court, once again, displayed that it had thoroughly analyzed the material submitted by the parties, it had read the pre-sentence investigation report, it had considered the case law, and found and stated explicitly that the defendant had not met his burden of proving that he intended at the outset to commit any of those offenses at the same time, or intended to, or committed one offense that necessarily entailed commission of another.
He was sentenced to the lowest, to the very low end of the guidelines.
That's correct, Your Honor.
What would a remand do here?
I don't think a remand would result in anything, quite frankly, because of the harmless error doctrine. I mean, even if there were a couple of instances where the district court was incorrect on this relatedness issue, the district court and U.S. probation concluded that the defendant had 16 criminal history points, which is three above what is necessary to result in the highest criminal history category of six. So he's at the highest criminal history category by a good margin, and he received a sentence at the low end of the guideline range. So I really see that
lowest, because it was 100 to 125 months.
The very bottom of the guideline range, that's correct. So if there are no further questions, I will step aside.
Thank you, Mr. Hayes. You have a minute, Mr. Murphy.
Yes, just very briefly. The government listed a litany of all of the things that were submitted to the court for the court to consider. And we don't dispute that's exactly correct. And that was all the more reason because there were so much documentary evidence, so much in dispute, that the court was obligated under its own responsibilities under Rule 32 and this court's case law to provide detailed findings. It did not do so in this case. So and there is a reason that this court should remand this case. And it isn't simply maybe it'll work, maybe it'll change the result, or maybe it isn't. These standards have a meaning, and if we're to have confidence in the rulings of the district courts, their findings and their rulings have to be accompanied by some explanation and some detail other than just saying, I agree with one side over the other. And that is, in fact, what this court has held in the past. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.